Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, a program dedicated to arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight, Lillian Vasquez speaks with Mateo Setti, who will be performing in the area soon. We also have a conversation with Eva Mikhailovna and Ivan McCormick, founders and one half of Eva and the Vagabond Tales. We'll hear a bit of music from their recent release, Letters from the Moon, as well as a brand new one they played in studio here at KVCR. We're going to start tonight with a conversation about gossip. Ken Vincent speaks with University of Redlands Professor Kathleen Feely about a collection of essays about gossip. Feely co-edited the essays with Jennifer Frost for a book called When Private Talk Goes Public.
You know, Jennifer and I have known each other a long time. She is a colleague and started out as a mentor. And years ago, I discovered we were both working on looking at gossip in the mid-20th century in Hollywood. She's written a book on Hedda Hopper, and I'm working on a book on the rise of the Hollywood press corps. And for years, we've been talking about putting a collection together. And finally, a couple of years ago, we decided to do it.
How do you define gossip for the purposes of this book? Like, what's the difference between gossip and just chatting over the fence, or gossip and teaching a class in front of a room full of kids, or gossip and, let's say, the news on the radio? How do you guys define gossip?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we are defining it purposely pretty broadly across the volume, thinking about it as information that more often than not is about other people, things, institutions, but sometimes it's about the self. People gossip about the self often for promotional reasons. It can be positive, negative, it can be accurate or not, and it can be distributed in many ways. So it can be distributed face-to-face in the bedroom, the backyard, courtrooms, embassies, via print culture, and especially the way we think about it most in the contemporary moment is via modern mass media.
Now, you say in your book that there is a relationship between gossip and history, meaning the telling of our story.
Absolutely.
History sounds so much more distinguished and factual than gossip.
It is true. I guess I would say gossip is an important building block of good history, that it should be both a subjective inquiry, but it also, it's a source to build history. It can't be the only source, because then really it is not meaningful. It's a way of recovering stories we would have lost otherwise. If we're taking seriously gossip, if you've ever looked at an FBI file, gossip. Lots and lots of gossip that got used in lots and lots of different ways. And those files are such important resources for telling the story, especially about mid-20th century America.
Now, you also, in the book, you assess what you call the function and impact of gossip at different moments and locations in U.S. history.
We do, and we look at it really across four centuries. We start looking at colonial Virginia church politics. We go to everybody's favorite, the Salem witchcraft crisis, and looking at the role of courthouse and jailhouse gossip in sort of sustaining that crisis. It was a way strangers could actually talk about and accuse each other, because they were gathering information about people they didn't know. We move through the 19th century and look at political and racial politics and the role gossip plays there. We land in the Cold War and look at the way gossip actually gets used to take down Joseph McCarthy, and come up to the present moment looking at sort of contemporary celebrity gossip and digital culture, and thinking about digital gossip, what's old, what's new.
And you also make an argument that gossip isn't just bad, that it actually does serve a social function.
It can serve a range of functions. It can create community. Of course, people get excluded in that creation, so it's one of these double-edged swords. It can empower the dispossessed. It can also empower elites, too, as well. It's also, if you think about it, a remarkably effective promotional tool in so many ways in a contemporary workplace. It's a way of getting information about a workplace, right? You're starting in a workplace. One of our authors looked at the diplomatic corps in the early 20th century and the way gossip helped that workplace function in so many different ways, getting information about your new posting.
We're talking with Kathleen Feely. She's a professor at University of Redlands and the co-editor of a compilation of essays called When Private Talk Goes Public, Gossip in American History. So it's nice to hear that you have done this historical survey that shows that gossip isn't just bad and it's not just between little old ladies or little old men sitting on rocking chairs, but it's also served a constructive purpose in our history and it's been important upon occasions. Is a lot of our media now just an advanced form of gossip? I'm looking at social media. And essentially, I mean, even when it deals with serious issues or it's sort of a broadcast to a lot of people, or whether you're just dealing with your family and your friends, seems like there's not much difference between what you have described as a historical gossip and this newfangled way of communicating that we have on social media.
Well, that's true. And as a historian, I'd actually push it back a little bit, because if you think about it, as a reporter, gossip's an important building block. It's just a piece of a larger story. Woodward and Bernstein hear gossip, rumors about a break-in, and the rest is history known as Watergate. But they didn't stop with the gossip, right? They had to build lots of other things around that, right, to create a real story. Then there's this sort of other piece, right, how gossip is news and how that the modern mass media has really sort of created that as a kind of new category of news. The one thing I would ask people to think about, we think about the salacious bits of gossip, which, you know, they certainly exist. So much of what gets classified as gossip is promotion. When somebody's selling something and we see them walking on a red carpet or on a talk show or doing some sort of promotional piece. And that's one of the things the film industry figures out how to do in the early and mid-20th century, is how to take business news that's really innocuous and mundane and kind of tart it up, call it gossip, and sell it.
And that
really
sort of creates buzz then, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Huh. And now there are obviously all of these new media platforms like Twitter, like all of the sort of gossip blogs that exist. And yeah, Twitter with however many characters you get, right? There's not a lot of that information, right? It sits there, right? And needs context to understand it.
Yeah, a lot of not a depth and context you can give in 140 characters, which means
exactly.
it's gossip, huh? All right. Well, Kathy Feely, thank you so much for talking with us. We're talking with Kathleen Feely. She's a professor at University of Redlands and the co-editor of a compilation of essays called When Private Talk Goes Public, Gossip in American History.
When Private Talk Goes Public is available at Amazon.com, Booksamillion.com, Staples.com, and a host of others you can find with a simple search at Google.com. Up next on KVC Arts, Matteo Setti.
That's life. That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shut down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune when I'm back on top in June. I said that's life. And as funny as it may seem,
Matteo Setti will be performing at the El Rey Theater in Los Angeles February 3rd. He was in San Bernardino at the California Theater not too terribly long ago as he was filming his PBS special, a concert of 14 songs which debuted late last year. Lillian Vasquez was able to speak with him there.
I've been a pauper, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing.
Not everybody can say they've been discovered by Pavarotti. How did that come about?
It was a great, great night that time. I was in Bologna, and in the end of my concert was a tribute of Freddie Mercury, my big passion. And these guys came to me. He asked me if I was interested to do an audition for the new musical came from Broadway. And I said, what is that? He said, this musical called Rent was a big, huge musical. And big Luciano. Luciano Pavarotti was the producer, and in that moment I said, okay, you're kidding me, it's not possible, it happened something like that tonight. And he said, no, it's like that, just we are interested to make you do the interview. So after 1 week they called me back and they say, okay, we are okay with you and you are the great guys for us. They flew me to New York. In that time I've met Luciano Pavarotti, and it was an unbelievable moment to me.
Sure.
Believe me, it was incredible. And I met there the maestro Luciano, and was my big lucky day.
It was a lucky day for you and for all of us. For you to be discovered by Pavarotti is something special.
Oh yeah.
Now this is your first public television special.
Yeah.
How did this come about?
To be an unknown artist like me here in America and to do something on the public television, it's wonderful, unbelievable for me. Especially if I think about the big artists make the show, like Paul McCartney, like Michael Bublé, Josh Groban. And when I think to be in that company, it's incredible, because it's so huge for me to do something like that. And I just can say thank you so much to everybody, because I'm so excited to do.
Well, we're anxious to watch the performance, of course. Now, the music that you'll perform, describe that, because as I look at your resume, you've been in kind of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Played the role of rock and roll and performed in that genre. You've done theater, as you just described, about Rent. Mm-hmm. And now you're kind of going to the crooner end of it. So the music that you'll be performing, tell me about that.
I love the timeless, elegant quality of big band and swing music. And I thought it was the best way to represent myself here about my experience and put together everything. And when I thought about swing, I think it was the best way to describe my new album. And was the best way to put together my love for American pop and my heritage, my Italian background. And like that, I think I find a way with my team to bridge the gap between this American pop music and Italian classic music. And from the beginning, I thought straight away to pick up some songs like Volare and O Sole Mio, that our American audience well known.
Yes.
And interpreted this song with in the swing way. And about the American pop, I thought Bruno Mars, Like That Heaven, and Skyfall from Adele, because when you pick up some solid song like that, you can change, you can find the best way to interpret it in your way.
With the audience. Swing brings people together?
Yes, I believe that, because I went in London to see, example, Michael Bublé, or my love for Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. This is my big connection.
Yes.
And I think it's timeless. There's no age for the swing. And I think, yeah, I want to do something like that to express myself in this way. It was the best. And I hope to continue to do the swing.
I hope so, too. Now, you're from Italy. Tell me about your background. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Modena. It was exactly the city of Luciano Pavarotti.
Oh, and so it was destined.
I like to think like that. And I grew up in the country. I loved horses. And my father was a singer too, and for that I had lots of music around me. And my father was my first maestro, I can say. And example from my father, I learned to be really free with music. And that because I'm so in love with musicals, rock, pop, lyrics, like Pavarotti did. I had a great time when I was a teenager. It was so free. Just like I said, I love so much the country, I love so much the animals. And now I decided to come in America because it was my dream. And now the dream become reality. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And we're so pleased to have you here. Were you trained as how did it really come to you?
I tell you nice things.
Great.
I used to go to the school with my bicycle through the country. And sometimes I start to sing by myself. And from the farm, someone answered me with the same song. And was nice to before get the school, because you know, for the kids, the school is not so, I mean, sometimes it's so boring for the kids, but I was happy in that time with these things. When I decided to become a professional singer, I was 20 years old. I saw Freddie Mercury in the TV, and I saw his theatricality, the way he used the body, the voice, the strong power he had. And I said, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to become a professional singer. And this was my first big, big thing in my heart to say, go, don't stop yourself.
So you performed for a few years then in Italy? Did you tour throughout Italy and you sang, American songs or did you sing Italian songs?
No, American songs, of course. Lots of different American songs and Italian songs too. But most of the time, more than American songs.
The audience in Italy liked the American songs rather than here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Of course.
It's very popular.
In Italy, yeah. Really popular, like from England, the singers from England, like Mercury, like Annie Lennox, but also like from America, Aretha Franklin, Barbara Streisand, Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, of course. We suppose was the best way to do my debut on the public television, exactly because it's a different way. We don't have in Italy something like that. And we thought was the best way to introduce myself to the American audience. When the idea came on the table with my team and they say, why we don't gonna shot your debut in the theater and to the public television? And I said, yes, because this is something from my roots. My past in Italy was the long time with the theater, and I thought, and we thought, was the best way to start in this way.
You've not lived in Italy for how many years? You live in America?
No, I live in Italy.
You still live in Italy?
But now I spend lots of time
more and more
in America.
Time here. Now, yeah. What side of the coast? In New York or?
New York, LA, and recently to the. I've recorded my album in Nashville.
And how did you feel? What did you like about Nashville?
I'm arrived in Nashville. I get my hotel, and after I take a walk in the center. And I recognized straight away was something really new for me, really strange. First of all, I've seen Elvis everywhere. It was another one well-known in Italy. But I saw a lot of guys inside the pub, and lots of pub. And everybody played, and everybody was really talented. And I said, maybe it's a wrong city for me because they are too much talented. But no, I was really happy. And because someone in the past told me, the Nashville, they told me, you can find the really good musician in Nashville with a big heart, and this, I find the guys like that, and I'm really happy about my new album because there's a lot of passion inside. I'm really happy, really grateful for these musicians.
You have this connection with Pavarotti, but you also have a connection with the Vatican. Can you share that with me?
Yeah, they chose me to record the songs when the Pope was beatified and was the first May of 2011. And when they called me, it was another unbelievable day. I was in Parma, near Modena, really near, where there's a Parma ham, another interesting town. They called me and they asked me to do that. And I said, yeah, of course. Because, first of all, because it was my Pope, was the Pope of the world. And for my country to do something like that was a honor for me. So, me too, I was in front of the TV, it was 8 o'clock. And everybody was so sad about the Pope when we miss John Paul II. But now really happy about Francesco. We love Francesco. Anyway, when I heard the voice of the Pope inside the song, I have a chill everywhere because I grew up with this Pope. And it was a great, great thing to do. And I'm really happy to do it because it's something I'm never gonna forget.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it was a wonderful opportunity for you. Now that you're living primarily more in the United States, what do you miss about Italy?
I need to be honest, I miss Italy, of course. Sometimes I miss the food.
Yeah, but I was going to say, our pasta does not hold up to your Italian pasta.
But
any, no.
I tell you when. Say. My teacher of my voice, she lives in Texas. And I find right there an Italian restaurant, pasta. She said, okay, I try. It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I mean, in LA, I find something really good too, in New York too. But what I miss about Italy is sometimes, especially the view you have when you go in Napoli, the wonderful Sardinia and the sea and the hills and everything, because I grew up there. But I hope so much to stay in America.
Okay,
now.
So what do you love about America?
First time I get America, I was really excited and really scared. The language, about everything. But I find the people really friendly with me because I try to ask to them something, half in Italian, half in America, and sometimes with their hands and blah, blah, blah. And they were so kind with me. And I felt straight away really comfortable. And I said, this was a dream, but this is the reality. Good.
Now, when I visited Italy, I felt the same way.
Oh.
No Italian, and all with my hands and with my English, and I just felt they were so warm and wonderful, wonderful people. Anywhere we went in Italy, it was just wonderful, wonderful. Who would you say has been your influence, your musical influence?
From the beginning was Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra. But in the years, Barbara Streisand, Stevie Wonder, Sting, Michael Jackson, Elton John, Beatles, and lots of artists.
A lot of influence.
Yeah.
There. If things were all lined up, if the stars were lined up and you had your way and you could just cast a wand and say, boof, who could you see yourself performing with?
Okay.
I know you've had to at least thought about it at least one time.
Okay, I have two poofs.
Two poofs.
Poof, Barbara Streisand, and poof, Stevie Wonder.
Ah, very quickly you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you get to Barbara Streisand, I'll be looking for that one.
Okay,
I'm
I hope so.
See that one.
I hope so.
Me too.
Why not?
I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life, I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart just won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking, come this year, July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and die. My. Oh, ha, ha.
Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Matteo Setti. He'll be at the El Rey Theater in Los Angeles in early February. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts, a program dedicated to arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. Eva and the Vagabond Tales, a band out of Riverside which combines a bit of folk, a touch of the wandering storyteller, and a feel from both long ago and today. It's music and conversation with Eva Mikhailovna and Ivan McCormick of Eva and the Vagabond Tales as KVC Arts continues.
Hi, I'm Jeff Baker, KVCR-TV's Man in the Kitchen, now with a new weekly feature for radio on 91.9 KVCR called Savory Road. Join us every Sunday morning during Weekend Edition as we roam our region exploring the food and the culinary personality of the Inland Empire. You'll hear Savory Road on Weekend Edition Sunday at 7:35 and 9:35, right before the Will Shorts Puzzle on 91.9 KVCR.
You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Up next, Eva and the Vagabond Tales, a band out of Riverside with a feel of old Europe. Music, maybe, that you would find outside of a small sidewalk cafe. Now, this band has been quite fond of playing on the sidewalk in and around Riverside. You can go to evaandthevagabondtales.com for more on the band. Oddly enough, that domain name wasn't taken. You can also check out their Facebook page for more about the band, including performance dates, of which there are a lot in the near future. In the meantime, let's go to a recent conversation with Eva Mikhailovna and Ivan McCormick, founding members and one half of Eva and the Vagabond Tales. Straight from the website, Eva and the Vagabond Tales is an old-time folk group that puts Western, gypsy folk, and ragtime into a musical melting pot and more there. But this is a really cool description, and it's, as I said before, a nice curiosity for marketing purposes. Where did this blend of titles come from then, I suppose?
We just got everything that anyone's ever said about us. We kind of brought it together. People have posted on Facebook, said little quotes about us, and so we just got everything together and came up with that phrase from everybody else's sayings.
Okay. And now Eva, and we also have Ivan McCormick in here. Tell us how this even came together.
I met Ivan through a friend, and he was part of a band called Mad Marionettes. And I really like their music, so I have actually never played any shows, or I've never even been to local shows, and he kind of helped me start my band after he heard my music.
Ivan, you had this person come up to you that had never been a part of making music.
Yeah, I had been used to playing out in places and also working on music and writing music and developing music. She showed me her music and I really liked it and I became a fan right away. And we just started learning her songs as a two-piece and just figuring out how to play them live and complete them as best we can. And then we were asked to play at a local college, and we weren't even a band yet, but we ended up enjoying it and it just kind of took off from there.
You guys actually got the gig before you had enough material.
Mm-hmm.
to perform a gig than a mad rush, I suppose. Okay, so Eva, the bio states again, you were born to a musical family in Russia. Describe your family in this context, please.
My grandmother went to college to be a choir conductor. And so when my mom was born, music was a big part of their life. And so my mom and my aunt also, they're twins. So they went to college both for piano. My mom, she taught me how to play piano before I even learned how to read or write. So she taught me how to read music before I learned how to read or write. I grew up listening to a lot of classical music. And then when I moved to the States, she married my dad, and he listens to a lot of oldies.
Wow, what a blend of things to put together. How old were you when you moved to this country?
6 years old.
Okay, so you still have memories, I read, about the whole family gathering, playing folk music, when coming together for meals. Was this a nightly?
Yeah, and when we were in Russia, one of my mom's cousins, he was a guitar player and a comedian, and so he would come over and we would all get together and he would play his guitar, and my cousin and I, we would sing with him, and he taught us like how to sing, and he would play funny songs for us and everything.
And it was the foundation, let's say, of what would be happening. Now, the two of you played as a duo for a bit around Riverside. How long was it before it became a quartet? And I suppose I maybe should insert, were you realizing from the onset that you needed a bit more to thicken up the textures here?
Yeah, as soon as I started recording, just like little scrap recordings, I started adding bass, harmonies, so I knew right away we needed a harmony singer, and right away I knew we needed a bass player. So it started out with a bass player joining us, and then a couple weeks later my cousin started joining me on vocals and a little bit of guitar stuff, and then from then we had like a set band.
Did I see a video of the two of you doing a dance with umbrellas?
Yeah, that was my cousin.
That was your cousin, okay, that's the one, okay. Ivan, beyond the accordion, you've also, I don't know what to call it, so I'll just state my ignorance. What do we call that triangle-shaped guitar?
It's a balalaika from Russia.
A balalaika.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is a three-string guitar with a variety of tunings, but you guys, how do you use it primarily?
Well, we didn't ever really look up how to tune it or anything until recently, so we just got used to tuning it like a guitar.
A half step lower than a guitar.
I can't remember now why we did that.
But I don't remember. Either.
It's just a random thing.
Hey, Steve Earle did Copperhead Road. He had never played a mandolin before writing that, so that's cool. Well, Ivan, while we've got you on the mic then, so many of us don't know the accordion versus we hear of the button accordion versus the thing with the keyboard on it versus a squeeze box. Can you break us down for us, all the different names for this?
Yeah, it is confusing because at least the button accordion and the keyboard accordion are just both called accordions. Main difference is for like your lead melodies, the button accordion is laid out a little bit differently, and it's actually makes it really easy to play in one key. All the notes are arranged whatever key you're in, all the buttons are closer, as opposed to like a piano where you have to know your scales more and stuff like that. So I play the piano one because I knew how to play piano already. Other than those two, there's the concertina is a smaller version. There's some that are used for tango, which I can't remember the name right now, but they're all reed instruments. They all use wood and reeds, and so they all have a similar sound, but they're just slightly different in how the notes are laid out. Some of them play a different note if you're pulling out the air. Like when you push the air in, it plays a different note than when you're pulling out, so that's something you have to get used to.
I never thought of it as a reed instrument. That's really cool. I hope other people will find it cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only really name only two accordion players that are out there, and in all honesty, you're one of them. So the other, Sharon Shannon, Celtic Music World.
Okay.
So after a while, you were joined by Carol Heller on vocals, and I want to say some electric guitar, but you don't always have the electric guitar. That's just the occasional texture again, yeah?
Mm-hmm. We actually have electric guitar in our album, but you can hardly hear it. It's really buried, and it actually sounds more like an old organ kind of sound. We use a lot of like Western tremolo kind of guitar effects, and so that's what Carol's playing for us.
And then how did you end up finding Al and Carol? How did this, again, these are people that came to the show, they were tapping your foot. Hey, do you play an instrument?
Craigslist.
Yeah, really?
Yes, Craigslist.
Oh, wow.
We make ads on Craigslist. We got a couple different replies. We got replies from these bass players saying they have naming all their equipment, and it was just too much to handle. And so Al just fits. And so we met up with him, and he joined right away.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. Now, Ivan, you seem to be a big part of arranging, or at least in the onset. So I want to talk a bit about how the songs come together, what form they're in when they're first heard, and then how they tend to get fleshed out from there.
Well, usually Eva, she writes pretty much the whole song, and then she'll do some kind of demo recording, and then she always sends it to me, just asks for my opinion. So I give her a bunch of opinions, and then she kind of goes back in and takes what she wants and fixes it. However, we both kind of agree that it's like the best way, and sometimes the songs end up a little longer or a little shorter.
So often, I guess, Eva, do you usually write on a guitar or?
It's usually a guitar or piano.
It could be either one because we've got both on the album. Let's go ahead and talk about this disc. You guys were only together really for about a year before you released a self-titled EP. That was in 2012. Then the full-length album, the one that I have, Letters from the Moon, that came out just fall of 2013. Is this much like the gig? You had the gig and then wanted to make enough material for it? Or did you, by the time you put this album together, you had the material for it?
I had the material for a really long time. It's just I was taking forever to finish all of it. And when we released the EP, we didn't even actually release it as an EP. We just put some songs together for our friends and we just said, oh, we have a CD now. And people came, and then the songs from the EP are the same songs that are in the full-length album.
Okay.
They're just recorded and better.
Gotcha. Yeah. The EP was just a step up from an old mixtape that you know, we would share with friends. You recorded the entire album in a 1920s house that you lived in.
Yeah.
Tell me about this recording setup. I'm instantly taken to some old farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, and of course cables running from things that shouldn't be plugged in anymore. And
I call it a 1920s house. It was built in 1921. My parents live in the front house, and I live in the back house. And the back house actually used to be an old horse stable, but we turned it into a house. We did it ourselves, so it's kind of...
The walls are crooked.
The walls are crooked, but it's nice. I love it. And I decorated it like 1920s style because I love the 1920s. And so you can hear some creaking in all the songs because it's not completely soundproof.
And that's just simply you shifting your feet or maybe a tree outside or scratching your recording studio. Okay. That actually gives a character to it that you're not going to get in a pristine studio somewhere.
That's true.
And I guarantee the pictures are better. Someone was talking about the unique packaging of the album, printed on envelopes.
Yeah, that's how we sell all the CDs.
Okay, so we're talking about a CD in an envelope. It's called Letters from the Moon, and so it's actually set up like a letter. It's a cool product to have, even though it sits differently on the shelf than the rest of your CDs. Again, straight from your site, talk to me about bending the laws of traditional songwriting and sound. Easy enough, I suppose, once a person has heard this album to then hear the statement and it makes sense, but we're looking at people just hearing some of the stuff in the background for the first time.
When I write the song, I kind of stick to a format, but I don't let that control the songwriting, especially when Ivan's around. He will give me some advice that's usually way different than what people, how they would write, how they would arrange. Especially a lot of things people notice is the bass lines are usually not like a regular bass line. It's more like a melodic guitar line, but played on bass. So a lot of things are different that way.
The album made up of antique waltzes, and I'm glad it's actually written there somewhere because that's what I hear through and through. Haunting harmonies, nostalgic melodies. It's more than just lyrics. There are stories, but again, we'll get to that. Track one, Novembers, and that's a plural, Novembers.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a very haunting, far-off tune, and I caught glimpses of phrases, okay? The moon and the stars don't hide themselves at night. That's the beginning. Versus later, if you hide me away. What's going on with this song?
Oh, it's kind of like a secret love thing. It's talking about if the person hides me away, I'll still wait, even though it's still secret.
Mm-hmm.
But it's comparing it to like the moon and the stars. They don't hide themselves, so why should we hide ourselves? But it can also be like a bigger thing, like why should you hide something about yourself or your personality or all that.
Okay, nice. We hear the piano, the acoustics in the room. Is this an old upright grand that's maybe not in the best shape? I mean, tell me about the sound that we're hearing. Again, it's a very haunting, far-off thing. Is that post effects?
That sound, actually, that one for that one song, I recorded it at a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
Just the piano track I recorded at the friend's house. They have a big living room, and the piano, it's just an upright.
Okay.
It was the only piano I could find that was in tune, so
okay.
I just used his piano, and yeah, you could hear his doggy walking in the background, too.
Oh, I'm going to listen for that now. Okay, I'm totally going back. November's, as stated, it's a very haunting, far-off, slow-paced tune, which really picks up then with Thieves, the next track toward the end. We start hearing some mallets or some sort of interesting percussion.
That's a mix between Ivan playing spoons.
I know there's like a snare with brushes.
He did all the percussion. So there's snare with brushes, there's spoons, and then there's like I just did some with my hands.
All right. So we're talking about layering upon layering. I mean, after you guys have the initial, what's the weirdest, wackiest percussion instrument you've picked up and started playing for this?
Well, the most interesting one was, I don't know how the idea came around, but Eva uses harmonicas in a lot of songs. So I just grabbed one time that wasn't being used in the song, and I just started playing, like rubbing it against the accordion on a metal part, and it kind of sounds like a washboard or something. And people see it live, and they're like, oh, that's really interesting, and it's a lot of fun to play too, so.
Would have sworn that at one point I can actually cross that off now. I thought I heard washboard in there, so.
Yeah, it could be. And it's fun because I could still pull off like chords at the same time.
Oh, wow, yeah, you could actually double live. That's nice.
It's not as hard as it looks, but people seem to enjoy it.
No, it sounds cool, and I really like to catch you guys live, especially with Mr. Bourdais. Okay, now this one, maybe the first on the track, it has a nice old-time feel on this one, a slight gypsy jazz feel to it. And I don't know if this is the first time we get the accordion on the disc or not.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, it really comes through for the first time. But, okay, so now quite a ways into it, we take a bit of a break from everything traditional, and the percussion that starts happening on this one is tap shoes, tap dancing. What possessed you? Are you tapping along to the song anyway? This would be cool. Are you wearing these during a live performance and then it just happens?
I think it's because when I wrote the song, I was taking a tap class. I love tap dancing and I just love the sound it makes. And somebody mentioned, I think it was my cousin or Ivan, they said, why don't you tap dance during one of the shows just to make people more interested in us? And we just somehow incorporated that tap dancing into the song.
So if you do, or when you do this live, do you take a break before this number and say, okay, folks, hang on, I need to change my shoes? I mean, or you try to be subtle, but because you can't be quiet in tap shoes no matter what.
Yeah, I used to change my shoes, but nowadays it's kind of embarrassing changing my shoes because they know what's about to happen, so I just wear them the whole time. I just try not to move around a lot.
Gotcha.
And they won't hear it.
No, but you're clacking away whether or not you mean to, okay. Now another far-off pondering tune, another story, and fun sound effects. This is for the next tune, Train Travelers. So many stories within this. Some folks write lyrics, some much like a diary entry when they write down their songs. But you write stories. You read a lot, don't you?
I actually don't read at all.
No, really?
No, I hear stories of, I get stories from other people and other situations. And then I try to compare them to my own, and whatever feeling I get from that, I just over-exaggerate it and imagine, like, what if this was, like, in a bigger situation, and then I'll write a song about it.
This one starts off with the nice sound of a scratchy record. Of course, post-production again on that one. What was your purpose here?
It just sounded so empty in the beginning, and I wanted it to kind of have some kind of continuation from the track before it.
Okay. Yeah,
so I just added that old scratchy record thing in the beginning.
I'm down on the floor, can't move anymore.
the lyrics kept on coming back, and I eventually just had to stop and play it over and over from the beginning. I stayed up all night to see who I am inside. Am I no one? Is this a plea, like the moment right after someone walked out the door?
Yeah. You? Yeah, it's kind of about when someone walks away and you don't feel whole. And so maybe somebody new comes along and you're still not whole, but you're asking them, like, well, just keep me because I'll get better eventually. So that's pretty much what it's saying.
Okay. Ivan, what draws you here musically? I mean, it's not like you were listening to Zeppelin and Van Halen one day and then picked up the accordion to go with it. Oh, Weird Al. There's another accordion player I can name. Okay, good. Sharon Shannon, Weird Al, and you. Okay. So what brings you to this music? Were you both playing this type of thing before forming the band? Or Ivan, she was playing this, and so you started playing this way to accompany?
Yeah, we both had similar musical interests already, so it kind of just blended really well. I didn't play the accordion too much before that because I was more of a piano player and I was actually a drummer to begin with. But yeah, then the accordion just worked really well for a lot of things, and it also just became the instrument that we would take everywhere. So some of the songs are actually played on accordion. Even if on the CD they're like on piano or something, sometimes we don't have a piano, so I play it on accordion, and I just kind of got better at playing accordion because of that. But yeah, we both had similar backgrounds in music, which makes sense why I liked her music right away.
Now into snow, that's where the multi-layers, I wonder if you can break down layers of the sound effects opening this track. Do you recall what's in this one?
I actually found something on the internet. I wanted to find a sound effect of it raining in Russia. So I Googled rain in Russia and somebody uploaded something. Also, there's bells, some local bells, and then I also added some bells from a keyboard just to make it like an atmosphere of like a cold, snowy, rainy, wet day in Russia with some bells ringing in the background.
Okay, again, it's a cool one. Every time you get any sort of effect other than the straightforward playing of the instruments, it catches your attention. It's really great for the listener. Grapevine. This reminds me of a person that I interviewed not long ago, April Damasio. She has a song called Breaks. Again, it's a breakup song. I think that's what Grapevine is here. Something about you heard someone new is coming along. Point is that this seems to be another breakup song, but like hers, it's actually a fun song. And for her, it's a breakup song, but one of her favorites to play live and get the people going with it. Is this a breakup song?
It could be. I kind of wrote the lyrics really fast, but I was more along the lines of two people miscommunicating, arguing together, and hearing things about each other through the grapevine.
So it's as simple as that. It's a couple people in a conversation, not necessarily a breakup, okay. And I also have to say, too, there's some birds floating around in there, too. And at the hour that I was listening to this, I, again, had to stop the CD player and go outside and see if the birds were coming out at that wee hour of the morning. I couldn't even tell you which track that one's on, but now a question about Goodnight, My Darling. Is that indeed the last track? Do
yes,
you recall? Okay,
that
well,
is the last track.
By title it rightly ought to be, but Goodnight, My Darling, again it starts off slow and dreamy and drifting like the opening track, but then really picks up to a nice clip. And I wonder about that in that the first song almost feels like a wrap-up song. It's a gentle ending, but really it's more of a beginning. So what I'm asking about is the choice in sequencing, which track would go where. Did you have Goodnight, My Darling in place already and you knew, hey, this would be a good one to wrap up? Because again, the opening track, November's, that could gently ease you into the disc or take you out. Did you have November's in mind to open the disc and Goodnight, My Darling in mind to close the disc?
I actually had it the other way around. I really wanted to open with Goodnight, My Darling because it was a little more upbeat.
Yeah.
But then somebody told me the intro to that song is way too slow and we needed something a little more upbeat. So then we decided Thieves should be opening song, but then we thought that's a little too poppy for us. So we thought November's kind of would ease into it nicely without sounding too slow.
Okay.
So that's why we did it that way. And Goodnight, My Darling was convenient because it was goodnight and it was like an ending.
At your website again, go ahead and state the website again, please, for us.
www.evaandthevagabondtales.com.
Okay. If you could visually take a person through the website so they know what they're going to get when they get there.
Well, we had it built by Gary Moody, and he's really cool at designing everything. Mm-hmm. He made it very old, wooden, kind of vintage. You get there, there's a homepage, there's an about section. You can see music videos, our songs, our tour dates. We're going to have a shop there soon. Everything you need from us is going to be on there.
So we can get the disc. The old EP, again, that's been repeated. Everything that was on Letters from the Moon is what was on the EP again, right?
Most of it. But we were thinking of redoing the EP and having that available again.
Was the EP, was that before the full band?
No, that was during.
Okay, mm-hmm. The EP was then too. Okay, well, it's more than the music. You guys have a very retro look and feel about you, so it's more than the music. What do people get when they come to a performance from the Vagabonds?
We take a long time to create our set list, and we like to do it in a way so that it'll be like a whole show, not just like a show of songs, but a whole kind of act. We're working on doing the umbrella dance again, and then there's tap dancing in some of the songs. The way we decorate the stage, we have like a big banner. It looks kind of like a theater.
Okay.
It makes us look like a theater. And then we have a guest book where people can sign in and leave us notes. It's like a feather, right. 1800 style calligraphy pen. It's just like we try to make a whole show out of it, everything.
Eva Mikhailovna and Ivan McCormick of Eva and the Vagabond Tales. During the interview, we've been hearing music from their recent release, Letters from the Moon. While they were in the studio, they shared a brand new one. The working title, Winter Song.
Thank you.
Winter Song, a brand new one from Eva and the Vagabond Tales. More on the group at evaandthevagabondtales.com, or you can check out their Facebook page as well. Lots of performance dates in the area in the very near future, including right around the time of this broadcast, give or take a day. Somewhere in the near future as well, there will be a live performance which will be shot for a new video, so you can be a part of that if you want. Keep checking their website and Facebook page for more on that. Just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Eva Mikhailovna and Ivan McCormick of Eva and the Vagabond Tales. Thanks to Matteo Setti at the El Rey Theater in Los Angeles in early February. Thanks to Kathleen Feely, co-editor of When Private Talk Goes Public, available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and other online retailers. Here at KVCR, thanks to Donald Taylor, Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Weisgarber, Sean Houlihan, Emmanuel Rogers, Ken Vincent, and General Manager Alfredo Cruz. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear any and all KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcr.org. Though while we're in the process of building a new page, the most current shows may take a bit of time before getting in. And starting in February, KVC Arts will become a weekly show, Wednesday nights at 7, with a repeat Sunday evenings at 6. You won't be losing Snap Judgment. It'll simply be moving to Monday nights at the same time. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.